part of the hit list today is that we're going to be jumping into more hypnotic inductions, how to work with intention rather than by assumption. The other side of it, too, is we'll be getting into hypnotic depth. So basically, that demo that I did at the end of the day yesterday is going to gradually be unpacked today and tomorrow. And throughout all of it, it's going to begin to transition into some of the techniques for change as well. So I give you that as an opening frame just to say we're going to get to that. There's something else we'll do before we go there as well. So I'd mention it's kind of an interesting idea just to kick off today by talking about vocabulary. But again, it comes down to the mindset that when we all begin using the same words, when we have a common language, you're going to find that we're going to be able to cover a lot of information in a rapid amount of time here, and it's going to begin to plant some seeds. So there's some things that we will intentionally gloss over just because, okay, well, there's a whole category on this coming up later. But there's also some things that, by getting into the specifics of it now, will give you that education in terms of just how we talk about hypnosis, how we communicate with other hypnotists, how we speak to our clients as well, that it's going to set the stage for the next several days. By fluke of alphabetical order, it's unfortunate that the scariest concept we could spend in our entire course is the very first word that we're going to talk about. Yay, let's kick off today with some wonderful energy. So abreaction. Now, I will give you a strongly held opinion on this, which even though it is a serious conversation that we need to be having here, it's also something which is massively overblown and distorted. Because understand, before we even talk about what it is, we're going to set it apart as two categories. One abreaction is one that we as the practitioner consciously work to build. The other is the spontaneous abreaction. And we haven't even talked about what this word is, but I want to set it apart as two different definitions first. One is the, let's call it practitioner-directed, and the other is spontaneous. And all of the scary conversations that we may be about to enter into are entirely about the spontaneous one. And as much as this is a real conversation, as much as I interact with other hypnotists and really drill it down to ask them, how many spontaneous ones have you actually seen? Asking people who are rather big names in the profession, who have seen upwards of 20 or 30,000 clients, you find numbers that can only be counted on one hand.
Really?
Not many. Now, when the one goes, oh, you get it all the time. No, they're talking about the practitioner directed. Or, and hear this phrase very carefully, there's something they're doing that's bringing it about. There is a local hypnotist that for a while was warning his client ahead of time about the risk of spontaneous abreaction as part of his pre-talk. And the look on Becky's face should explain everything. It's one of those moments of, by giving the negative suggestion, he was actually getting it. In my office here, it's only been maybe three or four. I've had the spontaneous abreaction, and yes, I accept the fact that I haven't told you what we're talking about yet. That's intentional. The spontaneous one in a stage show, that's only been like three or four as well. So not many. Not many. So let's talk about what this actually entails. The abreaction is that noticeable emotional reaction to the process of hypnosis, a revivified event or a triggered response. If I can give you a very unfair paraphrase, they are freaking out in some way. It's that moment where something in the process or the process itself has triggered some sort of emotional reaction. Now, the client begins to tear up because you've said something of an emotional nature. That may just be catharsis. That just may be some sort of emotional release. We're not going to immediately label that tears equals abreaction, because there's sometimes you may have just said the one thing that they needed to hear in that moment, and I'm not about to label that as abreaction. No, there's going to be a clear, noticeable difference that, wow, something different is going on in this moment. So how do we handle this experience? Now, this is the one and only place that one of the other books in this course, when I hand it out later, there's a reason I've held it back, is the moment that I will invite you all to open up the book to a certain page. I will pass around a Sharpie, and you will cross out a line of text in that book. And that is the only time I will ever say anything negative about any book that I've handed you, And I want to make that point big and bold for that reason. Because that other book says you should take your thumbs and begin to smooth out their forehead and say, shh, everything's okay. It's okay. Shh. Because there's a principle we now understand as anchoring. Now, understand the quotation marks I'm going to be using as I explain this. In theory, your client is in the chair in the ab reaction, paraphrase, freaking out. And you place your hand on their shoulder and you go, shh, it's okay, it's okay. In theory, I'm using the big quotation marks because, again, as much as I've heard people talk about it, I've yet to see someone actually demo it. So we're talking on paper at this point. In terms of actually doing a demo of it, I've seen people try to do a demo of it, and maybe they get a hint of it, but they don't get the full-blown effect of what the in-theory conversation is, which is where I draw the line. In theory, you place the hand on the shoulder as they're in that emotional state, and you've copied and pasted that emotional state to that gesture. And in theory, note the fingers again, they're somewhere and someone then places their hand on the shoulder in the exact same position, and again, in theory, isn't getting old yet, that could trigger the exact emotional state, in theory. I've yet to see someone again trigger it back to the full-blown effect of what it was before. Have I seen traces of it? Yes, I'm on board with that. But the full 100% emotional state, absolutely. Anchoring is the concept we're referring to here. Anchoring can be visual, auditory, kinesthetic. I just simply described a lemon yesterday, and you were having a kinesthetic reaction to it. That was anchoring. So what's the rule here? Well, the message here is hands off in that moment. So this shh, yeah, no, absolutely not, and I will pass that a Sharpie, and you will cross that out because it is wrong. Let's modify it. I don't want to say it's wrong. It's out-of-date information. And the language that's here in your book is the proper response. And full credit to Jerry Kine for this. The language is the scene fades and you tend to your breathing. I like that. The scene fades and you tend to your breathing. How do you deliver it? Calmly, confidently, clearly. And you just put it on repeat with a confident tone until the wild bucking bronco fades on down. That is the first thing I will tell you in this course. You need to memorize that sentence. That is your get-out-of-jail-free card in the Monopoly game, should you ever need it. Now, we're going to use that line intentionally, because as we get to the concept of age regression, we will then be learning practitioner-induced practitioner-induced ab reaction. The premise here is very simple, and we'll come back to this phrase several times. When you create it, you have control over it. When you haven't created it, you don't have control over it. So that's why I give you the preamble of there's two different versions of this. One is the practitioner-induced, which we will be learning, and it is a valuable tool inside of regression. Also, there is the spontaneous one. And the phrase becomes, well, shouldn't we, when we get to the section later, shouldn't we follow that emotional state and solve the issue? Well, the answer is, you don't know if that emotional state has anything to do with the issue that, hear this phrase carefully, your client has hired you to help them solve. I'll give you a simple example, the most recent one I had. Woman's here in the office, we're working on weight loss, and suddenly, I mean, it is ab reaction. And in her case, the breathing was picking up, the tears were going, she is crying almost to a hysterical state. The scene fades and you tend to your breathing. That's right, allow the scene fade and just tend to your breathing. And I think I said it four or five times till it eventually calmed down. If I was not following my personal ethics here, I would have followed that emotional state because she told me she's an emotional eater. And here she is in emotional state, and there's some emotion. Let's follow that feeling. Go to the first time you felt that way. Now we're into age regression. But no, because after the session, without prompting, she explained to me what happened. Well, I heard the siren driving by outside. There's a fire station nearby. And it triggered the memory of, here's her husband who suddenly is clutching her chest 15 years ago, and the ambulance is taking him away, and they won't let her in the ambulance with her due to whatever safety regulation. And he dies on the ambulance, and she never sees him again. which we could start to make some assessments and go, oh, that's the emotional eating. But no, she was also an emotional eater before her husband unfortunately died in the ambulance. It may have triggered it even more, but I don't know that yet. So that's a place where I would have been unfairly making assumptions, possibly tracking the wrong emotional state. Which brings about the Roy Hunter phrasing about we always start with suggestion and imagery, because we don't know yet. The moment I'm defining and assigning, I am now diagnosing, and I'm not qualified to do that. So it's again where unless you create it, you don't have control over it. And in this case, I am still firmly a believer that that emotional reaction was a secondary issue. It was emotional eating and ambulance triggered that thing. Is that clear? Two potentially different things. So again, abreaction is only, quote, a thing we need to be cautious of when it's spontaneous. When it's practitioner-induced, now we have control over it, and buckle up, that's going to be day six. We're going to get there later. Yes?
Excuse me. I have been taught before that you, like, change, like, when they're in that, you break that pattern and go, what color is your front door? Or ask a
question
that will break the pattern. Is that...
The statement is there's another strategy of breaking the state is basically what that is, of just simply asking a question to draw them out of it. Mm-hmm. I tend to want to bring it down. Otherwise, in theory, again, I may be anchoring the criteria of the question to that. Also, I've been taught that before as well. If you're in this incredible emotional state and I suddenly go, what'd you have for breakfast this morning? Which there's something slightly, I just have to say, a little disrespectful about that, mm-hmm. as opposed to bringing it on down, you know. And granted, that may be an opinion because the person who I saw teaching that moment, I'll say it, did it rather poorly. You're in an emotional state, and I'd suddenly go, oh, I like that scarf. Mm-hmm. Which is this moment of, don't be a jerk. So you can experiment for yourself, but I'd rather bring the emotional state down. And then move on.
I heard this at convention, which was really helpful. I love this. The scene fades.
Yeah, the scene fades and you tend to your breathing.
I never heard that before, and so I really like that. And then the same person speaking, I forget who it was talking about, you don't ever solve something that your client doesn't come in for.
Right.
Because they had done that and it really pissed off their client.
Yeah, which is the exact point I already mentioned in terms of you don't know that that state of mind has anything to do with the issue they brought in.
Right.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like appropriate to solve whatever. They thought.
Exactly. So again, it's unfortunate that we actually, oddly enough, spend most of our time on abreaction and the equal amount of time on all the other terms. So if you run into it, though, memorize the phrase. Everybody repeat after me. The scene fades. Repeat after me. In unison. What does that mean? And you tend to your breathing. There you go. Which leads into the conversation, just a brief overview of age regression. It is a hypnotic phenomenon experience. So because I've now said that, it's actually a positive hallucination experience of going into a past event, revivifying as if you are there. So full age regression is revivification, as if you're there in that experience. Pseudo age regression is simply remembering. Now, age regression is a very polarizing conversation, which I completely shortcut by reminding you politely that age regression is a category. And you'll hear that type of phrasing several times in this course. Damon, what'd you have for breakfast this morning?
A smoothie.
Smoothie. Awesome. Congratulations. We just successfully did age regression. Now, it was remembering age regression. It wasn't now you're back in your kitchen blending something up, perhaps, or going through an ordering, or however you got the smoothie. It was a form of age regression. And if I find out that here's a moment that Luke wants to change, but he can remember here's a time I felt really confident, and I hear him suddenly say, you know what, if I could feel that way in this scenario, and I bring him to that positive experience, draw out that positive emotional state as a resource, and like a computer, click and paste, copy and drag that emotional state into that place where you want it now, that is age regression. But that's not this, oh, I'm not going to drag my clients through the mud of their past. Well, that's only one style of age regression. Age regression is a category. So there are some who, I will say it simply here, will very boldly say you should never do age regression, and they don't understand the technique and you should stop listening to them. Because again, it is a massive category with all these different nuances inside of it. And in this course, you're going to learn all those individual components and how to put it together. I give you a metaphor of the, quote, drag him through the mud style that you will be learning here, which is putting the magnifying glass on the wrong part of the process. It is not the magnifying glass to look backwards in time and understand the cause and why you deserve to feel this way, because that's how a lot of people are thinking of it. Instead, it is the slingshot. We're only pulling back into the cause for the intention of letting go of that old story you keep telling yourself as to why you can't have this change, to then use that momentum to propel you into the changes you deserve and desire. So now you have every reason why you should be living here now, and that old story is not who you are anymore. To which the, quote, finding the cause component of the process is the least of my focus these days. That's the style of regression you're going to be learning here. It's all about empowerment as opposed to having the old statement. You can have reasons, or you can have results. Results are a lot more fun. So understand age regression is a polarizing conversation. You're going to get the whole story here. The rest of this we tend to jump through rather quickly. We're going to compartmentalize words together because there's amnesia and there's aphasia. Two ends of the, quote, forgetting spectrum. Amnesia is the inability to remember or recall. It just ain't there. Aphasia is the, you know it's there, but you're not able to express it. So that's why I said yesterday in the demo we had an aphasic style of negative hallucination. He was able to connect with Becky in the chair, but he wasn't able to actually fully let go of that experience. When we get to forgetting a number, which we'll demo later on, 1, 2, 3, and the person can't express the number 4. That's aphasia. Full amnesia, 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, something used to be here. It's as if it's not there. So it's where when our goal is amnesia, this is going to be a big theme later today, when our goal is amnesia, we want amnesia as opposed to aphasia, and we'll hit that detail a little bit later. On a similar spectrum, there's analgesia and there's anesthesia. And now we're into the categories of removal of physical sensation. So anesthesia is that we don't feel the sensation at all. Analgesia is that you feel the pressure, but there is no pain, which now we can point back to the demo because Damon reported only feeling the tingling. We had full anesthesia in that moment, as opposed to, well, I felt you pinching my hand, but it didn't bother me. That would be analgesia. So two ends of the spectrum in terms of removal of physical symptom. Analgesia, pressure, but no discomfort. Anesthesia, just don't feel it at all. Clear? This will come into play in hypnotic depth. And look at that, we are already ahead of ourselves. We've already addressed anchoring. Hypnotic conditioning towards a sensory verifiable experience. Notice that that doesn't say touch, taste, smell, sight, hearing. No. Instead, it simply says sensory verifiable experience, because you listen to the radio and a song comes on you haven't heard in quite some time and it triggers all the memories associated with that song. Everybody watch up here. This is fun. I wish I could whistle more consistently. Yeah, that's me trying to whistle. A little bit better. Who heard it the last time? Exactly. So anchoring, sensory verifiable experience linked to another sensory verifiable experience. The visual was connected with the sound. The visual connected with the sound. The visual connected with the sound. The, oh, look at that, I just did it again. Brief history, animal magnetism. It was the term by Franz Anton Mesmer. Again, what we're basically talking about here is here's a state of mind that ever since they were people, we had. I'll look up the article. There's a really fascinating article written by an evolutionary psychologist talking about hypnosis, that here was the ancient hunter-gatherer, and what was it about their state of focus that could keep them focused and perhaps tracking an animal or tracking down what they're looking for in terms of food without mental fatigue throughout the entire day. And he's pointing to that as the early representations of a hypnotic state, bypassing the critical factor of, you know, we haven't eaten in several days. They were very much in a feast-famine patterning in terms of their diet, yet bypassing the hunger. Yet, meanwhile, we're a culture that's been led to believe in recent years that you have to eat every 6 years, otherwise every six times a day, every several hours, otherwise your body's going to go into starvation mode. Wait, what? Yeah, no, who's been selling you that one? Strongly held opinions coming later. So, by the way, there's snacks out there. So, animal magnetism is one of the early stages. So you have Egyptian sleep temples, you have all sorts of shamanic healing, you have all sorts of ritualistic healing practices that really don't have a name. And here comes Franz Anton Mesmer that suddenly calls it animal magnetism. Now, the brief history is that, unfortunately, no one could ever prove the magnetic nature of what was going on. He was referring to energy style healing, but no one could even track the energy. I say this in a very respectful way, but you look at the Reiki healing and it's almost identical to the mesmeric passes. I say that not to discount Reiki. I say that to point out that Reiki practitioners should be taking classes like this to understand the clear hypnotic components of what is going on that they're not realizing are also going on as well. There are hypnotic components because it is nearly identical. Franz Anton Mesmer referred to it as natural animal magnetism. He would magnetize water, and simply by drinking the water, people would begin to heal themselves. We'll get into some of the history of that later on. Auditory, sense of hearing, simply put. Authoritative, we've already briefly covered. To link authoritative with permissive. Authoritative, to use a very simple definition, you will. You are now noticing this. This is what is happening now. As opposed to permissive, you may begin to notice this, and perhaps the sensation might be growing. Mate, might, may, perhaps, more permissive style of language. It's not necessarily forceful, is the thing to point out, though. Because we can permissively deliver an authoritative suggestion. And perhaps now you're beginning to notice the sensation now growing throughout your body more and more with every moment that passes. Which is this balance of the two. Rather than labeling, you need this one and you need the other. We can be riding that balance between the two, but the question becomes, when do I make that transition? And that's inside of, as we get into hypnotic depth, that really becomes a just master course of hypnotic tonality. And that's a fun area. It's not just what you say, it's how you say it. Catalepsy. This is going to come into play today with hypnotic depth. Again, two ends of the spectrum. This is the whole word right here that defines hypnosis is not relaxation, and relaxation is not hypnosis. Catalepsy is either the complete and total relaxation of a group of muscles, or the complete and total rigidity of a group of muscles. And we'll talk today about the difference between small muscle catalepsy, relax those eyelids to the place where they just won't work, or the other end of the spectrum, those eyelids are squeezing down so tightly shut that even if you try to open them, they just squeeze down even stronger. Even if you try, permissive, they authoritative, just squeeze down even stronger. Or large muscle catalepsy, the arm so stiff and rigid, the to bend it, it gets even stronger. Or again, the full body catalepsy, which the simple advice on that is, don't do it. It's dangerous. So we'll cover more on that later. Pendulum, it's a method of hypnotic suggestibility. There are other modalities of work out there that put other meaning and other belief systems behind the pendulum as well. It's also going to make use of what's referring to as an ideomotor response, which are micromuscular movements that are not so aware to the conscious mind. So you're ever talking to somebody and they're saying something and they're disagreeing, but they're nodding? Yeah, bit of an ideomotor response to begin to track. And we'll play with that a little bit later in the course. Client, we're going to get into accepted terminology here. To say it respectfully, only one of us in this room is allowed to use the word patient. Congratulations. So from our language, we will always be hypnotist. And now, there's a geographic consideration here. I'm working with a hypnotist in France has hired me as a consultant, and for where she is in the world, it's entirely appropriate for her to use the word patient. And her using the word client in her French culture would actually be this almost negative word. Almost how in certain businesses to refer to the people who hire us as a customer is a little non-personal, a little impersonal, and client is a little bit better. There's a trend in personal training, and I find this fascinating, to refer to their customers instead of and perhaps as clients, but now in terms of students. And it brings about a better connotation of that personal training environment that, yeah, this is my student, we're working on improving their strength, as opposed to the customer you're just running through a workout, which is an ongoing complaint inside of that profession. It's a really fascinating trend. So client is going to be our language. Mm-hmm. Hypnotist, client is our accepted terminology here. On to the top of the next page, client-centered hypnosis. This is basically what this course is about. It's the process of fitting the technique to the client rather than the client to the process. Rather than I have this seven-phase technique, which is outstanding, and if you're not using this seven-phase system, you're not going to get results. No. Instead, it's going to be all about here is the appropriate methodology for this individual client and what they have presented to me. To go into the session with the mindset of they're going to show me what I need to see to put together the ideal process to help them out. That's what this course is about. It's not about having your favorite hits, your classic hits, your best of album and going, well, this is what I do really well. I'm going to run every person through this. Because even the discovery is, the more you're involved in hypnosis, I've given you the Roy Hunter books. Roy Hunter is probably best known for teaching parts therapy. But even Roy Hunter has actually sat in this room and taught a workshop and sat up here and said, I only do parts therapy with like 25% of my clients. Because it's just not necessary for every single person. There are certain protocols that people know that I have learned and I've been given permission to train. And even though I'm a trainer of them, the person calls and says, I want that. And I've listened to them and I'm realizing, you know, we could do that, but I think this would be a better fit and here's why. That's the method of client-centered hypnosis. And it's just the most ethical way to work with your clients here. Coma state. When we get to the Esdaile state, it's what it's referring to, one and the same. They referred to it as the Esdaile state, as the coma state, though really we mostly credit James Esdaile, a Scottish doctor. I would say it's not that he invented it, he discovered it, though the side history as we get there is that Dave Ellman perfected it, but even better, it was Dave Ellman's wife, Pauline Ellman, who mastered it. Because Dave Ellman would do these demonstrations of how to break the Esdaile state should it happen spontaneously. Ooh, theme is popping up again. If it's practitioner-induced, you control it. If it's spontaneous, you put an end to it. So the spontaneous Esdaile state was the fear of the turn of the century, 20th century doctor, was the absolute terror of the vaudeville stage hypnotist. Dave Ellman was the man who popularized how to break it. And you'll learn that method here in this course. However, it was Pauline Ellman, his wife, who was the one who was pointing out, the story goes, to break the Esdaile state, he had to wait until he spontaneously got one. And then one day he tried something out, and he actually got the people into Esdaile. And this will all make sense more later as we put these techniques in place. And it's the drive home, and Dave's going, I can't figure out why I got all these people into Esdaile today. Pauline in the passenger seat. I know what you did. So she is the godmother of all things Esdaile State. And we'll detail those methods a little bit later as well. Compounding of hypnosis. This is the technique of layering hypnotic suggestions for maximum effect. And if anyone ever says to you, direct suggestion hypnosis does not get permanent results, you are talking to a person who does not understand compounding. Is what it comes down to. I throw in some of these statements because it better prepares you to better communicate with the community at a whole, because the direct suggestion hypnosis is a category that's been given a bit of a bad name, kind of like the progressive muscle relaxation, which will be our next practice session this morning. The technique is only as good as the practitioner putting it into use. So the principle of compounding is that the more I deliver the suggestion, the more it compounds and grows itself. The snowball going downhill, it's getting stronger and stronger. Now, the principles of compounding that I'll share with you are based on the idea of compounding upon different levels. So to give you a very basic overview of what I mean by that, I can go at it very literally. You are now a non-smoker, and you're going to be a non-smoker the rest of your life. I can also go about it in a very non-literal way. As you imagine a house, the windows are finally opening up, and the walls of this house are covered in like a soot, a dirt, a grime. And with every piece of wind that passes through this space, clearing out that air once and for all, just as right now you feel every breath passing through your lungs as that house is finally becoming, and I'm very clearly talking about, you know, you're now a non-smoker, but it's compounding upon different levels of thought. Some of it is very literal, some of it is very logical, some of it is very emotional, some of it is metaphorical. And it's not the game of I'm going to throw everything into the kitchen sink and see what works. Instead, it's the compounding upon different levels. And that's the principle of compounding you're going to be learning here. We talked yesterday about conscious mind and unconscious mind. To throw in a computer metaphor here, the RAM of a computer is limited. The computer can only have so much RAM based on the motherboard of the computer. Did I say that right? Okay, good. Because I can butcher metaphors horribly if I don't do my research. So the computer in my back office is the beast, is what I've nicknamed that thing. A friend of mine built that. We built it together. And it's maxed out to be 32 gigs of RAM, which you cannot buy a computer from like Best Buy or a big box store with 32 gigs of RAM. Maybe nowadays you might be able to. You've got to build something like that. But even as that's processing video, uploading big files, it suddenly now slows down, you know. So it's limited. However, with all the video that I produce here, I'm continuously buying more external hard drives. Someone gets stock in Western Digital because I'm driving it up. So what's the message here? The hard drive, that's the unconscious mind. It's unlimited. You can always add more space, but the RAM is limited. So you'd sometimes see this number of 7 plus or minus 2. That the conscious mind can only process, let's simplify, between 5 and 9 bits of information at a time. To roughly paraphrase that, some people can multitask better than others. To really oversimplify it. And others need to be focused on one specific thing at a time. So even as you're sitting here listening to me right now, various thoughts have been coming and going throughout your mind. To borrow the term of Sheila Granger, the mind is always a bit of a chatterbox. Even in the deepest levels of hypnosis, random thoughts are kind of popping into the mind. Somehow I just thought of the squash that's in my lunch back there. Yay. So little random thoughts pop into the mind all the time. So it's the working memory is the conscious mind, and the permanent programming is the unconscious mind.